Welcome to the show, ESPN 102.5 The Game. The morning show here, Braden Gall, the Luke Rogers.
Good morning.
Good morning to you,
Happy
sir.
Happy Martin Luther King Day.
That's right. I have failed miserably by not mentioning that over the first 2 hours of the show. Happy MLK Day. The long arc of time bends towards justice, Luke. Just want to remind everybody about that. Julian Council producing, of course, at Julian Council. Intern Calvin hanging out as well. The Titans fall 35-14 to the New England Patriots over the weekend on Saturday night. And I don't really think there's any excuses to be made. I don't think there's really any grand sweeping, you know, things that we should have to sit back and contemplate and delve deep into the sports psyche to understand. They are just flat out the class of the NFL, have been for years, 7 consecutive AFC championship games, and the Titans are not there yet. And I thought that's what we saw on Saturday night. It's just a team that's not ready for that level of play yet.
Yeah, they were better than the Titans, and there's no way to you can't write this off to a call or two calls or, you know, a ball bouncing one way or the other. This, it was not that kind of game. They were beaten all facets of the game. They were out-schemed, out-coached, and outplayed by a superior team. And that's you take your lumps as a young team, and I don't know, there's silver linings, and we talked about that in an earlier segment with Buck Rising. Some of the things that you can take away as positives.
All right, sell it to me.
I think Titans fans can take away a lot from this in positives. I think Corey Davis had a breakout game, his breakout game on the biggest stage against the best team in football. And I think that's an all signs point, you know, upward sort of thing for Corey Davis. I think his season overall was disappointment for number 5 pick. I think that's a fair assessment. But I think his performance against the Patriots was, you know, a bright light in a dark season for a number 5 overall pick. And you can only build on that. And I would love to see him stay healthy for a season and get some offseason rapport. Remember as well that Marcus Mariota had really no offseason last year because of his injury. It's a chance to have a full offseason as a healthy guy with his young receivers, I think.
I'll go with the big stage didn't rattle the young players' silver lining. If you want to go with that silver lining and say, you know what, Adoree Jackson,
I was going to say the next name was Adoree Jackson.
Brown looked comfortable. Taywan Taylor dropped a few passes, but I think showed the athletic ability is clearly there, which is the reason he doesn't play as much as people want. He's got the athletic ability. He just needs the rest of the game to kind of come catch up.
And slow down for him, I think.
Yeah, Jonnu Smith obviously got hurt, by the way. The two big injuries coming out of that game, which I think is actually one of the biggest stories. Jack Conklin, torn ACL, could be out and be on the PUP list at the start of next season. We're not really sure yet. That surgery could happen in the next few days
and
weeks.
That would keep him out at least for the first 6 weeks of the season,
you would think. Yeah. And then I think Jonnu Smith as well, torn MCL. Looks like he will be back for all of the beginning portions of the opening of training camp and OTAs and all that good stuff. But so I'm fine with that. If you want to go silver lining, what is the silver lining? And I think the big picture silver lining is, of course, that you were in the game in the first place.
Sure.
The second silver lining is that it doesn't appear that the stage was too big for anybody. I thought everybody, to your point, Corey Davis had the best game of his young career. But I think the issue is just you got to understand where you're located in the hierarchy of the NFL and that your team, the Titans, just aren't there yet. And I don't think anyone thought that they were. I think there was people going, man, what if, what if, what if? And we had fun on Friday going, what if, what if, what if?
Yeah.
But that's why you play the games. That's why you get to these moments and you get excited about it. But nothing happened on Saturday night that we didn't anticipate. Now, was it worse than we thought? You give up 31 first downs. You give up 6 sacks, a New England Patriots record.
8.
Eight sacks. Sorry.
8 sacks.
8 sacks. 5 of 15 on third downs. That's not very good. 267 yards of total offense isn't very good. 80 of those coming in garbage time on the last drive there where you made the score look better than it really was. And even all of that, you still have a 7-0 lead going into the second quarter. So they just got handled. And there's a lesson to be taken from all of that and experience gained. That probably doesn't feel like it right now if you're a Titans fan. But I think next week, you know, you start to look back and you go, that was a big time experience for our team. We probably learned a lot.
Yeah, and listen, I we've said it before. I think the coaching again is something that can be improved. Even though Mike Mularkey was extended, and he said he's going to keep his offensive coaching staff intact, which I think most everyone thinks is probably a mistake. And we don't know how much of that is just coach speak or whatever. But my thing with him is, listen, like the Patriots came in and took away exactly what the Titans wanted to do, and that was run the football. And then the Titans had no answer for that. And, you know, I don't think they made very many adjustments. Couldn't get Derrick Henry going. Of course, losing Jack Conklin was a big blow to that. But if you're a team that can compete on a level and wants to compete for a Super Bowl, you got to be able to weather the storm of losing players, and still being able to do what you do and still being able to make adjustments. And that just didn't happen. And I think they got outclassed, and I think that was expected. The best team in football. They played the best team in football with the best quarterback in football and the best head coach in football. And
On the road.
And probably the best tight end in football with Gronkowski. And yes, Kevin Byard's an all-pro, but nobody can really stop Gronk.
There were a couple of plays where they had they put Cyprian or somebody else on Gronk. And immediately the broadcast team was like, yeah, you're going to need Kevin Byard to get back on Gronk.
Right. And even Kevin Byard couldn't.
He made a couple of nice plays, yeah, but it gets just hard to cover Gronkowski.
Guy's a freak.
Yeah, he's a monster.
He's a monster.
Danny Amendola catches 11 passes. Deion Lewis had a big game. James White caught a couple of passes and scored a touchdown. I mean, they distributed the football the way we anticipated in a short, quick passing game. Josh McDaniels outcoached Dick LeBeau. Now, I don't know if outcoached is maybe the right word, is maybe just coached, because Tom Brady is really what did that.
Right,
I mean, Tom Brady is the greatest of all time, potentially. I do think that Matt Patricia outcoached Terry Trubisky. I do think that happened.
Yeah.
I think that the first quarter played out exactly the way Titans fans would have wanted it to. 7-0, long offensive drives, a couple of stops on defense. The clock went quickly, and they got into the second quarter, and that's the blueprint. That was sort of the blueprint. Okay, the Patriots came back and tied it. Okay, what you needed then wasn't a quick three and out punt, give them back the ball, and then they go right down the field and score again. And then all of a sudden it's 14-7, and then you go for it. You've lost your right tackle. They score again. It's snowballed, and it's 21-7, and you're looking up and you're going, what the hell just happened? So I think that is an issue. Now, the out-coaching part is interesting. So Mike Mularkey yesterday, yesterday during his press conference, and you mentioned, so he's getting a contract extension. I don't believe he signed it yet. He's been offered a contract extension, but he said some things about the offensive coaching staff that are pretty interesting. This is Mike Mularkey after the game yesterday during his press conference addressing his offensive coaching staff.
I think Terry did a very good job, being a play caller. That's not easy. I thought he did a very good job.
Do you anticipate any changes on your staff going forward?
I don't.
He does not anticipate any changes on his staff going forward. Now, do you buy that? Is that just lip service? Is that just a question in the moment where he's got to – is that a must-lie situation where he just has to say no?
Yes, yes. And what is he to say? But here's the thing, though. Mike Mularkey, after the Kansas City Chiefs game, came out and answered questions honestly, saying he wasn't sure – and he hadn't got a vote of confidence from the front office.
And we kind of were like, why are you saying that, dude?
Right. So, I mean, I don't know what to make of this, except – listen – exotic smash mouth. Derrick Henry, 12 carries, 28 rushing yards. You can't say you run that Terry Trubisky did a great job. Was it 5 of 15 on third down? You know why you get in those positions on third down and third and longs? Because your first and second down play calls are bad. Your execution's bad.
35% on third downs for the season, 25th in the NFL. So that's one of the worst teams in third down. They were 46% last year, which makes them third in the NFL. They were one of the best teams in the league last year on third downs. They were one of the worst teams in the year, worst teams in the NFL on the year this year, and they were bad again on third down against New England. Their offensive line, I know Jack Conklin didn't play, but they allowed 8 sacks.
8 sacks.
That's a playoff record for the New England Patriots, who've played a billion playoff games, and that's the best they've ever done at pressuring the quarterback. 99 yards in the second half. 99 yards in the entire half
this
of football.
Is bad.
80 of those came on the garbage touchdown drive.
It's bad football.
So basically had 20 yards of offense in the second half.
It's bad football.
I don't know how you call that good call.
I don't either. And I mean, I don't know what Mike Mularkey's supposed to say. I mean, he probably gave the canned answer that he has to give at that point. But you have to think the ownership in the front office, John Robinson, Amy Adams Strunk, they cannot let things continue at status quo. Because what's going to happen is everybody in the division is getting better. Andrew Luck is coming back. J.J. Watt, Deshaun Watson are coming back. Mm-hmm. The Jags are in the AFC Championship. They're playing a game. You can't stay the same and expect that you're going to end up in the playoffs again. It just doesn't work like that, guys. The NFL everyone gets better or gets worse every year. We see at least 4 teams every single season are replaced in the playoffs by another team, which means if you're not getting better, you're getting worse. and you're not making any change at this point, at least from a coaching standpoint, that make you better, and you've been anemic on offense. You've been bad. You saw some flashes, but a lot of what we saw, we can write off to bad defenses in the Kansas City Chiefs and Derrick Henry, you know, running the ball for 191 yards. That's the second worst run defense in the NFL. And then you play a team that's somewhere in the middle with the Patriots. And what do? They concentrate on taking away your running game, and they took it away, and your offense was terrible on third down, terrible in the second half. And that's when you're playing from behind, which when you should be really trying to make moves and getting chunk plays, and you're not getting them.
We'll hear from Taylor Lewan on how he believes the offense performed this year. You're not going to want to miss that. We'll react to it, and you'll hear it from the vocal captain of the Titans offense, Taylor Lewan, when we come back. His name's Luke Rogers. My name's Braden Gall. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game. Oh, thanks, Lobby. Luke Rogers, Braden Gall here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Taylor Lewan after the game. Now, the conversation, now that the offseason has started, is the offense and the play calling and the coordinator and the coaching staff. Mike Mularkey has been offered an extension. He will be back next year. I don't really particularly have a problem with that at all, nor have I even during the three-game losing streak. I do believe that there needs to be an evolution of the offense that needs to take place, whatever that means. However you define that, there needs to be something that has changed because the offense underachieved. And you don't need to hear it from us. We'll give you our thoughts on it, but let's just let the vocal leader of the offense explain this to you first and foremost. This is Taylor Lewan after the game about how the offense played in 2017.
Well, it's hard to do that since the season's over now. Not making your question light or anything, but I mean, you know, as a team, we have a lot to improve on. I think that we showed that a lot throughout the year. Inconsistent play on offense. At times, our defense struggled, but for the most part, carried our team. Our special teams, I think, were pretty good all year. But as an offense, you know, I'll be the first one to say that we underachieved this year. And to make it this far, that's you know, extremely promising. But we can't do that again in the 2018 season. We got to come out guns blazing. We have the firepower to do it. It's just a matter of getting it done.
I love everything about this comment from Taylor Lewan because he takes responsibility. He acknowledges very, very rationally and logically the situation, which is, hey, this was promising that we got where we got, but that we need to be better, self-evaluation, that we have the firepower to be better. I love everything about what he said, that we underachieved, that there's no excuse for this again next year, that we need to be better, but that this was a good first step. I think that is as calculated and rational and as tempoed like that is exactly what I wanted to hear from the vocal leader of the Titans offense was that right there.
Yeah. And I think Marcus too, and we I don't know if we have the soundbite from Marcus as well, but I think he actually had some interesting things to say too, which if you read between the lines, I think he's also saying and echoing what Taylor Lewan said, that they've got to be better. They have to be. You're not gonna compete and get to the playoffs next season with the offense looking like it did. I mean, that's as obvious as anything. I think for anybody who watched the Titans at all this year, for Titans fans, I think that's why so many on I hate to look at Twitter and gauge the entire fan base on Twitter.
Gotta be careful.
But there are a lot of people that see what we saw, and I think what Taylor Lewan saw is that they've got to be better, and it doesn't mean they're getting more players. That could help at some point, but. You've already invested in a franchise quarterback. You've got
high draft pick.
You've got two really good bookend tackles. You may not have Jack Conklin.
Very high draft pick.
You might
not
have him for the first 6 weeks of next season because of the ACL. You've got a number five pick at receiver. You've got one of the best tight ends in football in Delanie Walker. You've got a lot of the pieces. You're just not putting them together. And that, to me, I lay that solely at the feet of Mike Mularkey and Terry Rubisky, and yet – according to Mularkey, we're keeping things exactly the same.
I pulled up 10 statistical measures of the Titans offense.
You're a stat man.
Yards per game, passing yards per game, rushing yards per game, points per game, yards per play, total plays, turnovers, third downs, penalties, and sacks allowed. I think the only one I should have added to this is probably red zone efficiency.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I think I got basically every possible measure that is important to evaluating how an offense performs.
So what do the metrics say, Braden?
And these aren't even like sabermetric, like super stat guru guys. Like these aren't like Pro Football Focus. These are just like regular numbers.
This is an inception stats, like stats within stats.
In every single one of those categories, with the exception of penalties, in every single one of those categories, yards per play, passing yards, rushing yards, points, yards per play, plays total, turnovers, third down conversion, sacks allowed. They all were worse this year than they were the year before for the Tennessee Titans. And some of them significantly so. The third best rushing offense last year, 15th this year. The 11th best offense in yards per play last year, 18th this year. They pass the football for 199 yards a game. We have guys going.
Ridiculous.
We have guys going for 5,000 yards these days.
199 is a first half for a good quarterback.
Yes, they averaged 20 points per game, 19th in the NFL. They ran 974 plays, 29th in the NFL. They ran fewer plays than almost everybody in the league in a year and in a time where football is going faster and people are running more plays. Their third down conversion rate went from one of the best in the NFL to one of the worst in the NFL. The only thing that got better was penalties. They were second in the league in penalties taken this year, and that's good. I'll give them a lot of credit for that. Some of that's on the defense. Yeah. Some of that's defense didn't take penalties. So basically in every single statistical metric that you can come up with for evaluating an offense in the NFL, they took major steps back. If you want to say Marcus didn't have an offseason, fine, I'll give you that. If you want to say Marcus was banged up, fine, I'll give you that. If you want to say DeMarco Murray was banged up and Corey Davis missed some time, I'll give you all of that. It doesn't mean that you should be worse in every statistical category you can possibly come up with. That has got to be somebody's fault. And that, to me, if you're going to draft high and have all this talent and we believe that you got the personnel and we believe you got the offensive line and you've got the good running game and you got all this stuff, you play in a bad division, that's the coaching staff.
Yeah.
That's what that tells me.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. You can't take that many steps backward and not have heads roll at some point, especially on that side of the ball. And I think what we heard from Taylor Lewan as well is that the defense did carry this team, you know, especially down the stretch. They carried him. And this is a team that built through the free agency and through the draft this last year on the offensive side of the ball. The year before, you didn't have Corey Davis. Didn't have Taylor. Didn't have Decker.
Jonnu Smith.
Didn't have Jonnu Smith.
Four of your top six pass catchers are new.
These are the guys that are playing. Like, yes.
You've injected those guys into this
offense.
You should
be better.
Right.
And you weren't.
Your quarterback is in year three, not year two.
Yes. It's just... The offensive line got worse. So I'm thinking the offensive line coach has got to go.
Tell me a player that got better, other than Derrick Henry, because he got more carries.
Yeah, I mean.
Name a player that got better.
Maybe Taylor Lewan.
Okay.
I'll give you that, but I can't think of anybody else. Because I think Taylor played a great, great year. And not to mention, I think he really held his temper this season.
And that's because he was really good already last year.
Right, he was really good already.
Like,
yeah.
Some of that is who got better this year. Well, the guys who were great were so good last year that they didn't play as well. And they still played well, like to your point about Taylor Lewan. But other than Derrick Henry, I'm not sure you can look at a single player on the offense and say that guy got destroyed. Like, Delanie Walker's great every year.
Right.
So, like, he's not taking
a step back.
But he's not getting better.
Matthews took a step back. Conklin took a little step back.
Probably.
DeMarco Murray took a step back. It was hurt, but it wasn't the second.
The interior of the offensive line took a step back. Quarterback took a step back. Again, I think the players take responsibility. They own it. They know it. But my issue is, to your point about how teams get better or worse, there is no status quo in the NFL, right? Like, unless you're maybe the Patriots. Four teams will make the playoffs every year that didn't the year before. There's this sort of cycle that happens in the playoffs in the NFL. And to maintain where you are in the pecking order in the AFC, the Titans are going to have to evolve. And that's the word that I keep coming back to is evolution. What does the next stage look like? Where are you going to take this thing that you call this exotic smash mouth? What is the next evolution of that? Because you can't just stay with what you've got.
Right.
Like, and this is even something Dick LeBeau is learning the hard way right now. Like, the jokes last week were the Belichick and the Patriots are glad that Dick LeBeau hasn't changed his defense in 30 years.
Yeah.
Like, that's the joke. And Brady clearly hasn't figured out, right?
Right.
Now, I'm not saying the Titans have elite personnel on defense. I think they can upgrade. But the bottom line is you've got to evolve and change and be one step ahead of what the next guy's doing in the NFL. And it feels like they're not only – that might have been the case last year when nobody saw it coming and we didn't know what it was. Well, now everybody knows what it is. They've seen it all. They've got tape on it all.
Film.
They've studied it all.
Yep.
And now this year, every single number is worse. Every single stat is worse, and that means there needs to be a change in some capacity. So if I like Mike Larkin as a head coach. I'm fine with him staying there. I think the offense needs to be changed, and there needs to be an adjustment and evolution in the offense.
I would agree. And I would say just one thing. If you watched the Minnesota Vikings last night and both Case Keenum and Stephon Diggs' interviews, there's one thing they both said consistently besides thanking God. They also said, we were just put in a good position to make plays. And that goes back to coaching. Both said it to a fact that they were just put in a good position by their – and it's humble. They were being humble, but they're saying we were put in a good position to make a play and made the play.
Like Case Keenum's had a great year. They've had a great defense. Marcus Mariota is a significantly more talented player.
Absolutely.
And if you're telling me Case Keenum can make those plays and be put in those situations to win, then Marcus Mariota should be as well.
Yep. Like I said with Shula, there's a reason why no one's asking him to be head coach. There's a reason why Pat Shurmur's being asked to be head coach.
Bingo. All right. When we come back, let's have a little fun. Maybe not. I don't know. I thought this was absolutely hysterical. One of the best things I saw on the internet. Titans fans, you might want to cover your ears, though. When we come back, we'll do that. Luke Rogers, Braden Gall, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
He's a great leader. You know, and he loves the game. He makes everybody prepared. And every time he's going out there, he's a true competitor. You know, he has a lot of heart. And people can doubt him all they want to, but we know what he can do, and he proved it today.
He's a dog. I want to know what Jarrell Casey has to say about him choking in big moments. While you sit at home and watch us next week.
Watch it! Need to love it, the underdogs on top. And I'm going to shine, homie, until my heart stops. Go ahead, envy me. I'm Raps MVP, and I ain't going nowhere. So you can...
Julia Council producing. ESPN 102.5 The Game, Braden Gall, Luke Rogers. That is Calais Campbell following the Jaguars' win, 45-42 over the Pittsburgh Steelers. And then Malik Jackson, of course, jumping in right at the last minute there. That was a post-game interview, of course, in the locker room following the Jags' win. And they, of course, call out Jarrell Casey. Jalen Ramsey had a lot of choice words with a few expletives added, which also, by the way, I believe was the headline on the New Orleans Times-Picayune after the Saints loss was just expletive, was like the actual word.
It was.
But Jalen Ramsey, you know, screaming and yelling after the game. You got Malik Jackson obviously calling out a Titans player by name. Calais Campbell defending his quarterback is originally where that all started, was Calais Campbell talking about Blake Bortles. And I thought Blake Bortles played a pretty darn good football game. Does he not look like Ben Roethlisberger, by the way? Like,
he
in the face?
Does.
Like, they just, in the, like, they just both look like each other. Anyway, listen, Jacksonville, great defense this season. Blake Bortles had his bad moments and had a couple of good moments. I think he was pretty good yesterday in critical situations. Leonard Fournette had a great day despite battling through an injury, which strikes me as like every game for him these days. But they are clearly playing the disrespect card. Like, the Titans tried it all week, and it worked against Kansas City. They tried it all week against the Patriots, and it didn't work.
No.
The Jaguars clearly used the disrespect card all week. They were upset in the locker room after that game yesterday. They scored 75 points in two trips to Pittsburgh this year and went 2-0. That's pretty impressive stuff. Does the disrespect card work against New England?
I don't think it does. And I think we saw that. Listen, I mean, disrespect, that'll motivate you to a point, but we're talking about maybe the elite defense in the NFL with Jacksonville. I'd say them in Minnesota, which are still playing because of that, have the elite defenses in the NFL. And yeah, that's only going to take you so far. I mean, they've got so many good players. Two all-pro corners, Calais Campbell, who I think probably should possibly be the defensive player of the year in football, just because of his performance on that line, how good they are up front, pass rushers. I mean, they've got everybody. Miles Jack, I mean, Telvin Smith. They've got everybody who can play, can run, and can get after the passer and can defend the pass on that defense. And that'll help you. And listen, I mean – also, Leonard Fournette. Did you know that Leonard Fournette had the most touchdowns this season at Heinz Field? Six touchdowns at Heinz Field. That's more than Le'Veon Bell had at home this season. So that's going to help as well.
Let me hear this again. Again, Calais Campbell, after the game yesterday, after beating Pittsburgh, being interviewed by a television reporter, then Malik Jackson steps in. Let's hear it again.
He's a great leader, you know, and he loves the game. He makes everybody prepared. And every time he's going out there, he's a true competitor. You know, he has a lot of heart. And people can doubt him all they want to, but we know what he can do, and he proved it today.
He's a dog. I want to know what Jarrell Casey has to say about him choking in big moments. While you sit at home and watch us next week.
Watch it!
How offended are you if you're Jarrell Casey? What can you say?
Yeah, I don't think you can say much.
There's nothing you can say back to that guy.
Right. Plus, now. He ended it with a Ric Flair Which I think that's a great way to finish that out. But yeah, hey, look, those guys are sticking up for their guy, and their guy has been trashed and, you know, called out by just about every team in the NFL. You know, he's the whipping boy of the NFL as far as quarterbacks are concerned. It's Blake Bortles and how bad he is and how bad he's been, and he's trash. And it who else said that? It was Texans. The Texans.
Jadeveon Clowney called him trash.
And then they all sent him trash cans. Yeah.
And then he actually turned it into a charity moment, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah, but I mean, it's been a recurring theme this year. And so, of course, they're going to stick up for their guy. And they are playing. He has a valid point. Like, it's tough to.
There's nothing you can say if you're Joe Casey. You can text him
and
be like.
Sitting on the couch. And
you could text Malik Jackson and be like, you're right.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing else you can say.
You guys are playing, and we are not.
Or you could say, when we did beat you twice this year.
and I guess that's
probably his response.
That feels good, but.
Yeah, well, I'll at least say this with the Jags. I mean, it's not lip service what they've been saying about Blake Bortles. Like, these guys actually legitimately seem like they're pretty ticked off about all the press out there and all the things people have said about Blake Bortles, and they've continued to win. Even if maybe, I don't know. I don't even feel like deep down inside they believe that they need a new quarterback. It actually seems like they believe in this dude. So,
credit to them. That's the interesting angle here is. Like, they're in this weird spot. If he beats New England, I mean, listen, already beating you beat Buffalo, obviously defense. You beat Pittsburgh, and he was a big part of it yesterday.
Well, they already gave him the fifth-year extension,
right,
so he's going to be back next year regardless.
But is this the long-term answer for the Jacksonville Jaguars?
Dude, like, takes you to the Super Bowl. It's kind of hard not to.
What do you do?
And you drafted him, what, third overall, and you committed to him for 5 years. It seems like. And in 5 years, he can take you to a Super Bowl. I feel like, how do you move on from that?
I agree. I mean, but you're going to have to give him.
Because you're going to have, if you beat New England, you're going to have a shot to win it, too.
No question.
you're Super Bowl champion,
Jacksonville Jaguars.
You're going to have a real good shot to win this sucker.
Does anyone think they can beat New England? I mean, we obviously got all week
to
discuss it.
I do.
Like a Michael Strahan style New York Giants.
I mean,
approach.
Let's be honest though, because you're seeing it. And I saw Will Brinson from CBS Sports tweet out last night. He's like, okay, you got Brady, Foles, Keenum, and Bortles. That's the final four left. I know how this ends. But I'm kind of sitting there and thinking about a couple years ago when the Broncos won with a transcendent defense and Peyton
a bad quarterback.
Peyton Manning was horrible that year. They had Brock Osweiler, who was fine before he like fell off when he went to Houston.
No, he might as well be Nick Foles.
Yeah, but Peyton Manning was awful that year and they still won the Super Bowl, which is really, and you saw the year that the Ravens won, Trent Dilfer, average quarterback, won a Super Bowl, where I know we put a lot of stock in these quarterbacks, but if you go out there and you take care of the football and you're able to run the football well and you can play defense the way the Jags do, then yeah, they have a heck of a chance to beat New England, especially when they've made Ben Roethlisberger. Well, he played well yesterday after the early turnovers, but they made him earlier the season look terrible. They made a lot of quarterbacks this year not look great. So I think Jacksonville can put up points like they did yesterday. New England's defense isn't great. Pittsburgh's defense wasn't great. I can absolutely see them winning this week in Foxborough. And Blake Bortles getting him to the Super Bowl. Who knows what happens?
I can't believe we're living in that world right now.
See, that's the world we live in, though, because we count out the Eagles last week. And we forget that the Eagles, as a whole offensive unit, were pretty good outside of...
Good defense, too.
Yeah, the defense especially was one of the best in the league, top five defense in the league. You look at Minnesota, Case Keenum has been pretty good this season. He's going to get MVP votes, but their defense has been the best one outside of Jacksonville this season. You have a bunch of great defenses and some ho-hum quarterbacks just showing in the NFL that, yes, if you probably want to win a Super Bowl, more likely you're going to need to have a great quarterback, but you can get by running the football well, by keeping up with the football and not turning it over, and by having a great defense. And that's what you have with the Final Four in the NFL, which kind of debunks all theories of you must have a great quarterback. Now, if Brady goes out... if Brady goes out and wins it, then you'd be like, oh, that's because he played against Foles, Keenum, and Bortles. But still, we're looking at this point where the Final Four... Three of the four don't have amazing quarterbacks, but they have great defenses, great running games. They have an opportunity to win this.
I think if New England had one of those great defenses, we would look at it differently, because what it takes to beat one of those great defenses, Jacksonville or Minnesota or whatever, or Philly, you need the great quarterback.
Yeah.
But you're not asking Case Keenum to beat a great defense.
No, you're not.
Now you might be this weekend, because he's going to have to go beat a pretty good Eagles defense on the road.
Right.
But if Minnesota wins and goes and plays New England, you're not asking Case Keenum to torch a great defense. You're asking him to beat New England.
Yeah.
Now, New England just obviously dominated the Titans, and for whatever reason, Marcus Mariota played pretty well against the Jags defense this year. I mean, they ran the football like crazy in the first meeting, and then even though it was low scoring and not pretty, Mariota made a couple of big plays against Jacksonville with his legs and won the game there.
What a strange caveat, too, to this season, to see that Jacksonville is in the AFC Championship, and the Titans, for whatever reason, were able to be somewhat effective on offense, effective enough at least.
And just slinging shade all over the place, just calling people out by name. Yeah. They're definitely playing the disrespect card, but it feels legit. It definitely feels legit. The question is, are they good enough to beat the greatest quarterback and franchise and coach of all time? I mean, that still remains to be seen, and that we got all week to discuss that. That should be a lot of fun. What is it that we just talked about those teams and why they all got there? We'll get your thoughts, Luke, on what happened over the weekend in the entirety of the NFL and what the Titans can learn from that.
Okay.
We'll do that when we come back right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Third and 10 from the Viking 39. Precious seconds left on the clock. The Vikings need a completion and an apparent field goal attempt. Here's Keenan. Dropping, looking, throwing near sideline, and it's caught by Stephon Diggs. He's going to take it inside the 15, 10, 5, touchdown on the final play of this game. Are you kidding me?
Are you kidding me?
You're listening to 102.5 Live from the Game Nashville Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. of Mount Juliet.
Yep.
Luke Rogers, Braden Gall.
You know, I wish, I don't know if he was, but I wish Gus Johnson was calling that game. Could you imagine
that is
the level of hysteria that Gus Johnson would have gone to and had he called the end of that Minnesota Vikings-New Orleans Saints game. Of course, that walk-off touchdown to Stephon Diggs.
Yes, Paul Allen on the call there, of course, from KFAN.
Well, that was Jim Henderson from WWL.
Oh, that's a different call.
Or WLW, whatever it is down there in New Orleans.
Oh,
that was a losing call. You saw
that's
how they weren't excited?
Makes sense. Yeah, I was like, dude, this guy is just showing zero emotion.
Because his team just lost.
Yeah. It's kind of like the Georgia call after the Alabama-Georgia game where the Georgia call sounds... I do enjoy listening to the losing calls. Of teams, I don't know if that's like a sign of something psychologically.
Revel in other people's
pain.
No,
I don't like revel in it. I want to hear it because it's entertainment. I guess I don't know.
A dark sense of humor, Brady.
On a very important day, of course, Happy Martin Luther King Jr. Day. This whole country could use a little bit more of his message. By the way, I will say this: Keith Jackson passing away over the weekend. I do want to mention that because I did see that as we're talking about broadcasting and the calls and, you know, the way the game is the story is told to people out there. As a kid growing up with Keith Jackson and Will Nelly and the Big Uglies and
the granddaddy
Fumble and Pasadena, California. Like I just, it just to see that, to see Keith Jackson pass away, that's one of those that hit a lot closer for me personally because I grew up with it.
I'm going to say the same thing. I grew
so
up, and
I'm
from the West Coast, so watching the Rose Bowl every single year with Keith Jackson was like the voice of my childhood, college football.
So I did want to mention that, and man, what an amazing, amazing broadcaster. And I do think when you look around at broadcasting, we're going to get back into the playoffs here in a second, but as we are now off on a tangent, as we tend to do, you know, you look at the broadcasters that are going on. I mean, we just got a chance to talk with Pete Weber today, who's one of the great play-by-play men in the business. Dick Enberg passing away just a couple of weeks ago. Vin Scully retiring from the Dodgers. Al Michaels, Mike Tirico. I mean, they're, you know, the Bob Costases of the world. There is this sort of age of broadcasters that's taking place right now that is sort of, you know, we're reaching the end of it.
Well, John Madden is you know, done calling games.
Right. So we're sort of reaching the end of what could be construed as the last 20 years of maybe the greatest era of legitimately amazing Hall of Fame broadcasters of all time. And when I saw that story, I kind of immediately was like, oh God, man, like that one hit a little closer to home. Because you know when you see celebrity deaths, like it never really impacted me until the characters and people were really close to me in my childhood. Like I remember when I saw you know, Tony Soprano, when James Gandolfini passed, when Robin Williams passed, like,
right.
You know, Prince and Bowie, like guys that affected my life so much, that's when I really started. And then I was like, oh, I'm getting older, because the people that I looked up to so much and cared so much about were starting to reach that age, and it was just obviously way too early for a couple of those guys.
Absolutely.
Keith Jackson, a full life and an amazing, amazing career, and one of the best broadcasters in the history of this great sports world we live in. So just wanted to say that. And you heard the call there for the way that the Saints and Vikings game ended, and I've literally never seen a play like that. I don't I can't compare it to anything. It's not a Hail Mary.
No.
It's not like one of those eight lateral plays where somebody pulls something, you know, crazy out of their rear end.
Right, not Cal Stanford or like Music City Miracle.
Just a complete meltdown by the Saints defense, a beautiful throw by Case Keenum, and just a heady play. Because if I'm Stephon Diggs, your first instinct is probably to step out of bounds.
Right.
Your first instinct is, oh, my God, we have no timeouts. There's 3 seconds left on the clock. We've got to get out of bounds and give ourselves a chance to kick a field goal. You don't ever expect to turn around and be like,
and there's nobody there. Yeah.
I've never seen a play like that.
The shock of all shocks. It's just you in the end zone.
So what do we have left in the NFL? We've got a great defense in Philadelphia and Nick Foles.
I mean, Jim Schwartz has done an unbelievable job for the Philadelphia Eagles. And I think we talked earlier about how Jacksonville is really doing chip on the shoulder, sort of disrespected. Doug Peterson's taken that with the Eagles as well, and really, really sort of taken up the cause for his quarterback, Nick Foles. Of course, losing Carson Wentz, everybody is down on the Eagles, and them being the one seed and the worst one seed and the first one seed to ever be an underdog or not favored in their first game.
I believe that's what underdog means.
Yeah, but I was looking for the word there. But I mean, yeah. They're doing the same thing, and I mean they won that game on defense. And
Case Keenum is the same. I mean he feels disrespected, I'm sure.
Yeah,
but great defense for Minnesota. Great defense by Jacksonville, and disrespect card clearly by their quarterback and their offense. All three
of
those
Patriots
teams
are playing the disrespected card.
by our own media, maybe we're being disrespected by Bill Belichick.
Right, they're saying there's
Tom Brady's playing
unrest.
Tom Brady's playing the disrespect card with his own head coach.
He's like, yeah,
you
exactly.
You don't respect me.
You don't
Bill.
Respect me. You made my trainer leave. So yeah, I mean
the deflator is no longer around.
I mean, what we're gonna find here is that at least one team with a dominant defense is gonna make the Super Bowl. At least one. So we're going to have,
And the Patriots will have to go through two of them.
Yes, to win it. And I think they're probably the odds-on favorite just because Tom Brady now has more rings than the entirety of the rest of the quarterbacks have playoff starts.
Blake Bortles also has less losses in the playoffs than Tom Brady, just so you know.
In facts the Super Bowl. Only. Blake Bortles has less losses in the playoffs than Tom Brady does in the Super Bowl.
Right, and he's got more
Blake Bortles 2-0. Tom Brady has 9 losses in the playoffs. Facts only.
Gosh, you know how stats can be misconstrued.
Drew Brees now has 6 playoff losses. What a loser.
Loser. Absolutely.
Actually, interesting stat, though, and you talk about those. I think it came out this weekend that four, like quarterbacks making their first playoff start versus Super Bowl winning quarterbacks were 4-8. Now they're 5-8. Drew Brees has 2 of those 5 wins by the other opposite guys. Alex Smith beat him 7 years ago. Outdueled him. Case Keenum beat him yesterday.
Outdueled.
Yep,
Alex Smith.
No one loves Alex Smith more than Julian Council. There is no question.
I mean, if you watch the game, he got outdueled by Alex Smith. there's nothing. Facts only. Just saying.
No, we agree. It's fine. I'm not disagreeing with you on that. I think it is. I don't think we're seeing some massive changing of the guard in the NFL, though. Defense has always had to be good to win Super Bowls. Running games have always had to be. I mean, look how the Patriots ran the football the last 6 weeks of the season. I mean, even their offense was predicated a little bit more on running the football down the stretch than even before. How did they beat the Titans? Well, they totally shut them down on defense. Yeah. Now, that's more of the Titans than anything else. No one's going to confuse this Patriots defense with the old Patriots defenses in 03, 04, 05, 06, 07, or whatever. But we've seen, the Giants in 07. The difference with the Giants in 07 and then again, 2011 when they beat the Patriots, is that they had Eli Manning. Now, I'm not saying Eli Manning's a great player, but Eli Manning's a clearly better quarterback than Blake Bortles and Nick Foles. Case Keenum has played great this season, so I think maybe he's the small exception. But if you're going to have the elite defense and win on defense, you also still needed a couple of you needed Eli Manning and the David Tyree play.
Right, you needed a couple of big plays.
You needed a quarterback to make a couple of plays in that game. So to me, Case Keenum is the guy that has the best shot.
But he made the play. I mean, down the stretch. Right. I mean, obviously
he also led him on the game-winning field goal drive 2 drives before.
Yeah.
So, I think Case Keenum in Minnesota is the best shot to beat New England. I think if you're anti-New England, I think what you want is you think Jacksonville's got a crack at you, and you think Minnesota can beat them. I don't think Nick Foles in Philadelphia.
Well, if you're pro-Nashville, Minnesota is now Nashville's team. The Wilf family has ownership stake in Nashville SC, so clearly that's our team now,
well,
right?
Well, Bill Belichick was born here, though.
So what?
That doesn't count for something?
No.
Bill Belichick, Nashville native?
No, he's not a Nashville native. He just happened to be born here. He ain't Nashville. Vikings, Nashville's team.
I hate the Vikings so much. But I love.
You're gonna root, but also you can't root for Belichick. They just beat you.
Yeah, it's probably true. It's also hard to root for Belichick, no matter what.
Real quick here, just seeing this on Twitter.
Is it a reputable source? Have you confirmed? Are you checking the blue?
I am looking at Field Yates.
Is it
here.
A real Field Yates account or is it a fake?
It is a real Field Yates account saying the Titans and head coach Mike Mularkey have mutually agreed to part ways, according to a league source. This is from Field
Are
Yates.
Are you sure about this?
24 seconds ago, Field Yates saying
Julian,
the Titans
sure
and
the
head
right
coach
source.
Mike Mularkey have mutually agreed to part ways.
Do you know about journalism and how you can't just – we need to double-check things?
No, Field Yates tweeting, filed ESPN, the Titans and head coach Mike Mularkey have mutually agreed to part ways, according to league source.
Wow.
So to me
– wow.
So on the other side.
All right, we got a whole hour to break this down. So to me, what this says is one thing and one thing only. And that is stubborn-ass Mike Mularkey didn't do something he was supposed to do. We will get to that when we come back. That is ridiculously massive news and changes the entire course of our final hour of the show. Luke Rogers, Braden Gall, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Mike Mularkey out as head coach of the Titans.